Really want to welcome everybody. Thank you so much for coming. It's great to be here in person. It's great to be together on Zoom as well. As we say every week, we really miss you guys. But I think some of the tension, the angst that we feel about separation is a measure of the longing that we have to be together. And it's a measure of that itself is a measure of the community we have experienced and that we treasure and love. So, you know, in this sort of difficult time, this in-between time, it seems, let's stay close to one another as we can, not necessarily physically, but just we welcome you today on Zoom. You're as much a part of this community as all of us here right now, and we treasure you and value you. Please do engage with the service on Zoom. You can put comments in the chat and interact with one another. We want to try and stay as close together as we can as we do these hybrid services. And remembering, of course, that one day we will be back together again. And I think it's important that we remember that. Today, we're going to continue our series. It's called, the series at the moment is called When Everything Seems Broken. And we're sort of exploring, you know, the tensions and difficulties and struggles of life at the moment in this time of pandemic. And the sort of up and down nature of it, where we sometimes, you know, perhaps a few months ago felt we were coming out of it, and maybe it doesn't quite feel like that so much now. And how do we accommodate to life in this new time? How do we look after ourselves, but also recognize that other people are struggling too? And how can we be good news both to ourselves and good news to the people around us, people we work with, people we live with, people, you know, our neighbors and people that we're connected to? So just exploring all that. Today, we're calling the message Making Time for Community. And I think probably for all of us, the pandemic has kind of messed up our relationships to some degree, right? There's the separation issue. There's this sort of difference issue where maybe... you know, some of our friends or some of the people that we've previously felt connected to are comfortable meeting in person. Others aren't. And, you know, maybe we're on a different page to people. And that hasn't been the case so much before. I think also the pandemic, honestly, has messed with all of our minds. So we're all a little bit weird at the moment. And maybe, you know, that's affected some of our relationships. We'll dip into that a little bit later on. But what we're going to do today is just, I don't think I'm going to say anything new today about community. But really what I want to do is perhaps kind of like give us all an opportunity to take a bit of an inventory of the state of our community life, the state of our relational life. Because life comes at us. I think, you know, even in normal times, it's very easy to live life responsively. You know, stuff's just coming at us and we adapt to this, adapt to that. We get pushed this way, get pushed that way. And we're not living necessarily life as intentionally as we would like. We're not necessarily living life based on our values, but more in this responsive way to circumstances. So I think periodically, in general, it's good to stop, look at our lives and think, okay, is my life, the life I'm living, the life I want to live? And we're going to look at that in this context of community today. So nothing particularly new, but an opportunity for us all to take stock. And what I'm going to do is just explore... basically, the way in which Jesus was in community with people. And we're going to look at the life of Jesus, and we're going to look at it through four lenses. So I'll give you a sort of heads up about what we're going to do. We're going to look at how Jesus reached out to people who were beyond his inner circle or beyond his comfort zone. Jesus was an incredibly inclusive person and calls us to be the same. So we're going to look at the challenge of that. You know, how inclusive are we being? Or have we kind of sat back a little bit and we're perhaps just, you know, hanging out with the people that we feel comfortable with? But at the same time, Jesus knew what it was to spend time alone. Jesus was, Jesus didn't have an infinite amount of time, didn't have an infinite amount of energy. So Jesus both spent time with God, restoring and nourishing himself on a center of love, which is God, and also time alone, time, you know, making time for himself. And so, you know, we're going to explore what does that look like for us. And then Jesus also had close friends, people who were really important to him and to whom he was important. And he invested in those relationships especially. So we're going to explore that. What I'm not going to do is come up with some formula for anybody about you need to do this, you need to do the other, but rather give us an opportunity, hopefully, for all of us, including me, just to reflect a little bit and look at, is there any area in which I'm a little bit out of balance? Have things shifted because of circumstances to a point where I maybe need to pay more attention to this area or to that. It's probably not going to be the same for all of us. And I'm not going to really say anything too much about the fact that we are in a pandemic, and that means for some of us that we're more comfortable meeting in person, for some we're not, and that we need to respect that and respect that for ourselves and for other people. And you know, we've just got to find our own way forward on this and our own place of comfort. So let's just jump into a story about Jesus in Matthew's gospel. We're going to read here in chapter 9 about the calling of a tax collector called Matthew, which is probably why this gospel is called Matthew. But here's the story. As Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. "Follow me," he told him. And Matthew got up and followed him. While Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they asked his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" On hearing this, Jesus said, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice, for I've not come to call the righteous, but sinners." Okay, and there Jesus is quoting to the Pharisees, to these Jewish religious leaders, the Hebrew scriptures, a verse from Hosea, where Jesus is emphasizing the mercy over sacrifice. In other words, love over religion, if you like. And there's many things we could say about this story, but I just want to pick out three things. First one is this: there's this whole concept of tax collectors and sinners. Matthew is a tax collector. Let's remember that this story is set in Capernaum. If you remember, in a couple of series ago, we were looking at the town of Capernaum, a small town where Jesus lived. So this is like Jesus' hometown. Everybody would probably have known this tax collector. Like, tax collectors, as we know, were really unpopular people because they worked for the Romans, the occupying Roman empire, and they got money for the Romans, but they also, in order to pay themselves, they would often cheat people or charge more or be forced to charge more in order to survive themselves and have a living. And many of them seem to have been very wealthy as a result of that. So they're very unpopular people. But this term, tax collectors and sinners, this idiom that the gospel writers use a lot, it seems to, first of all, it emphasizes tax collectors as a particular, a particular type of sinner, the worst of all sinners, if you like. The fact they say tax collectors and sinners. This term sinner is an interesting one because it seems to, in the Jewish context, in the first century Jewish context, and in the ancient Hebrew context, to denote the issue of those who violate familial and community welfare. In other words, there were all these laws that the Jewish people had, which were intended to keep community together. And that meant, it had laws about disease and death and sort of physical things, but also about observance of things like the Sabbath, religious observances. And the intention, you can see, was to keep communities together because it was a collective whole. It was also abused. It was used to control people, clearly. And that's why Jesus challenges so many of the religious leaders and the people setting all these rules. But the context here of sinner is one who has put themselves outside the community, if you like, by not following the rules, by not following the welfare of the community or the family as a whole. And you can see how a tax collector would come into that category. They're betraying their community in a way. So here's Matthew, who's put himself outside of the community. What Jesus does is say, "No, you're not outside. I'm going to bring you in on the inside." And we think of all the people. We're not really all that worried about tax collectors. I don't think we have the same concept of sin. That's a very loaded term. But we have prejudices. We have people we like, people we don't like, people who are kind of make us feel awkward, make us feel uncomfortable, people who we might, they vote a certain way, or they look a certain way, or they speak a certain way, or they, whatever it is. There's people that we kind of consider perhaps to be on the outside, or they're not within our comfort zone. And here is Jesus reaching out and challenging that and saying, "No, you're on the inside." And he brings Matthew onto the inside. It's a really interesting little reference to this in Mark's gospel and Luke's gospel. The same story, or it seems like the same story, is told, except that Matthew is called by a different name. So in Mark's gospel, once again, Jesus went out beside the lake. This is Capernaum, just on the lake. at the Sea of Galilee, a large crowd came to him and he began to teach them. And as he walked along, he saw Levi, son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax collector's booth. "Follow me," Jesus told him, and Levi got up and followed him. So Luke reports that story in a very similar way. And you know, scholars have debated, okay, what's going on here? Why is this two different people? And if so, where does Levi end up? Because you don't really hear too much about him. Other people say, no, it's the same person. One interesting way of looking at this, and I'm not saying this is how the ultimate way to resolve this tension of the two different stories, but one way of looking at this is to look at the names. Levi is from a root in Hebrew meaning take. So you could say that name, Levi, represents taker. Matthew, the name Matthew means gift of God, actually. And it's the root there is give. So it's like Jesus is calling Levi the taker, the giver, and he's renaming Matthew. I like to think this is what's going on here, that Matthew became the name of Levi, and Jesus changes his name because Jesus sees him in a different kind of way. Everybody sees him as a taker, but Jesus sees him as one who's potentially a giver. And that's presumably, we don't read too much more about Matthew in the Gospels, but as a follower of Jesus, and you think about how those followers really changed the world around them in such dramatic ways, his life was transformed. So Jesus sees somebody in a different kind of way. Somebody who's been labeled one way, Jesus sees the potential and gives them a new name. I lean towards that as an interpretation of these two different names. And again, I think we've got to think about the ways in which we label ourselves or we label other people. Can we see people in a different light? And what happens as a result of this, as we saw in that first passage, is Jesus goes eats at Matthew's house. And this is, again, this is a small town. This is where Jesus is living. He's not just passing through and has a bite to eat with someone and then he's off. It's like Matthew is now part of his friendship circle. Matthew is now included in a way that I don't think people could possibly have imagined. So there's something very intimate about this connection that Jesus makes when he's crossed this boundary, crossed this separation and brought Matthew back in. Jesus is calling us, I think, to rethink how we see other people, rethink how we see friendship, how we see community, even to rethink how we see family. Let's look at another scripture here where in Mark's gospel, where Jesus talked about his own family. It says, then Jesus' mother and brothers arrived. Standing outside, they sent someone in to call him. A crowd was sitting around him and they told him, your mother and brothers are outside looking for you. Who are my mother and my brothers? He asked. Then he looked at those seated in a circle around him and said, here are my mother and my brothers. Whoever does God's will is my brother and sister and mother. I mean, this feels a little bit offensive, actually, a bit rude of Jesus towards his family. But I don't think Jesus is doing away with family or saying family doesn't matter. The context, incidentally, of this passage is that the religious leaders have been accusing Jesus of having a demon. They're saying he's demon-possessed, that he's just crazy, he's just madman. And actually, his family kind of suspect that too. Earlier on in this passage, it says they think he's out of his mind, and they've sort of come to rescue him, perhaps do an intervention of some kind. So there's some tension here, clearly, between Jesus and his family. But I don't think Jesus is saying, my family doesn't matter. What he's doing is actually saying, perhaps we need to rethink family. How easy is it for us to kind of have our family, our close loved ones, the people we care about the most, and we just hold on to those, and we get benefit from that and comfort from that. Jesus is saying, okay, look at humanity in a different kind of way. I've come to include people who perhaps don't have that kind of close connection. I've come to challenge those kinds of barriers. I've come to help you see in a different kind of way, in a much more inclusive way. So Jesus is just incredibly inclusive. And bringing people into community, bringing outcasts in, lonely people. Jesus is looking at everybody in a different kind of light. Now, that might be the challenge for some of us. We might need to be looking at people in a different kind of way. We might need to be including people in a different way. But that's not the whole story, because Jesus has limited time and limited energy, and we pick up some of that tension in Jesus's life when he's interacting with people, especially when he's interacting with crowds. Let's just look at a couple of other scriptures here from later on in Matthew's gospel. So we just read that story in chapter 9 about the calling of Matthew. This is a few chapters later. When Jesus heard what had happened, and what had happened here, by the way, is John the Baptist has been beheaded. So somebody Jesus was very close to. Jesus was probably, in the early days, a disciple of John the Baptist. Some gospel accounts have Jesus as related to John the Baptist. Jesus loved John the Baptist, and he's been beheaded. And so Jesus is trying to get away. It's like Jesus is probably feeling a little overwhelmed, and he just wants to get away, just needs some space, needs some time. He withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. Hearing of this, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them and healed their sick. So here we have the tension that Jesus feels, like, I need some time alone. But then the need, the people who he sees in a different kind of way and has compassion on, and he heals them, and he reaches out and he includes them. But later on, just a few verses later on, it says this. So we have this interaction of Jesus with people, but then right afterwards, it says, immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. So Jesus still follows through with that intention to be alone and to center himself in God, to center himself on God who is love. And so this is another massive part of Jesus's life. So Jesus makes time for community with outsiders, but Jesus makes time for community with God. And we talk a lot here about the fact that God is present all the time, right? God is so intimately present. It's like our breath. Our breath is the very essence of God, present to us all the time, sustaining the whole universe. But Jesus lives like that and celebrates life like that. But Jesus is also very intentional about getting time, intentional, conscious time to center on God. And we read about this time and time again. Let's just look at a few scriptures, because I think it's very easy to read the Gospels and think of Jesus as just this kind of action figure who's doing stuff all the time. But here's what it says in the beginning of Mark. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Simon and his companions went to look for him, and when they found him, they exclaimed, "Everyone's looking for you." Jesus seems to be trying to get away. Let's look at another one. This one. Healed of their sicknesses, but Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. I think we have another one from Luke here, just a chapter or so later. One of those days, Jesus went out to a mountainside to pray and spent the night praying to God. So I mean, that's pretty intense. So Jesus is making time for communion, for community with God. And, think of it like we talk about God being present all the time, but, think about people that we're present to all the time. But there's moments when we specifically interact with people and we focus our attention on them. Maybe we ask them a question, "How are you doing?" Or we just interact in some more intimate way. And I think this is what's going on here with Jesus. It's very intentional. And recentering our lives on love kind of recentering when we've been pushed around so much by what's going on in our circumstances, whether, in our families, in our work, in all the different situations we're in that we're having to respond and adapt to. Recentering is such an important part of life for us as followers of Jesus. You're following in the footsteps of Jesus, as we see here. Our vision, if you think about it, is full of this recentering. We talk about sheltering from the frenzied pace of life. Life's just coming at us, and we just have to step out of the current periodically to recenter. We talk about slowing down so that we can explore the mystery and meaning of our existence, to kind of see, to recalibrate from what people think we should be, what we're told we should do, what we told we should, how we told we should act, how we told we should think, and that sort of performance dance, it to, okay, who am I? I'm one with God. I bear the divine image. And kind of recalibrating in that way. We talk about that being transformative, right? As we're transformed and healed to become better people, to become better neighbors, better friends, better co-workers, better spouses, better partners. This is not self-indulgence, right? It's about becoming the people that actually Jesus imagines and dreams we can be. And it's not just for our benefit. We are going to be better people to be around. We're going to be better friends to others. We're going to build healthier community if we've taken the time out and we've recentered ourselves. Here's a quote here from Ram Dass. Certainly don't agree with everything this guy says, but he says some, I think, really profound things, or said some really profound things and wrote profound things. I can do nothing for you but work on myself. You can do nothing for me but work on yourself. In other words, perhaps the greatest gift I can give the world, the greatest gift I can give anybody, is to be the best person I can be. Because I'm going to be a much more healthy, whole resource to you if I'm in a healthy place than if I'm in a worn out, needy, demanding place. And it's also, here's the sort of added benefit, I guess, is that people are more likely to want to be around me when I'm in a more healthy place, right? And I think the same applies for all of us. So making time for community with God seems an essential part of what Jesus does. Let's look at another scripture here. Then because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, to his disciples, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. So there's this making time for community for others, making time for community with God. And there's also connected to, I think, this getting away is making time for community with self. That we've got, you know, Jesus is saying to his followers here, come away by yourselves. Yourself is valuable. Be a friend to yourself. Make time for community with self. Now that could be time spent in, in spiritual practice, connecting to God, but also I think just resting, being kind to ourselves, being in a restful place, and perhaps doing things that we enjoy, that are good for us, and that nourish us and sustain us and re-energize us. Those are really good things. Okay, so that might be an area that we are personally neglecting. Okay, we're gonna sum all these things up in a second at the end to help us process, okay, where do I need to make some adjustments? For some of us, we might be just burnt out because with everything that's going on in life and all the needs we're surrounded by, we're not taking enough time for ourselves to look after ourselves. And perhaps some of what drives that is the performance or the need to perform to meet other people's needs and to meet a certain standard, because that's where we're getting our identity from. We're just going and going and going, and we can't just relax and spend time with ourselves because we actually don't think we're worth it and we don't think we're very nice to be around. And I think what Jesus is saying here is come by yourselves, spend time with yourself because you are worth it. You are, be a friend to yourself. Okay. Jesus also made time for community, not just with the masses, but with people that he was especially close to. In this passage, when the apostles returned, the disciples, they reported to Jesus what they'd done. Then he took them with him and they withdrew by themselves to a town called Bethsaida. Bethsaida is not just around the coast from Capernaum. The context here is that Jesus has sent his followers out to do his work, to do the work of the kingdom of God, the work of ministry. And they've come back and Jesus just seems to want to spend time with them. It's like this relationship he has with them is not a condescending, oh, you know, you're kind of losers, but I'll love you anyway. Patronizing kind of way. He generally seems to like them. And likewise, it's not utilitarian. It's not like, hey, I need a bunch of work doing here. So, you know, you go out and do it. And then, you know, they come back and it's like, okay, here's your next assignment. It's almost like he's missed them. He wants to spend time with them alone. And Jesus had close friendships with certain people around him. So Jesus is incredibly inclusive, but sort of as we come full circle now, Jesus also has people who he treasures, who need him and he needs them. In fact, he talked about his followers in a completely different way. In John's gospel, it says, I no longer call you servants because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I've called you friends. For everything that I learned from my father, I've made known to you. Jesus has friends and he loves being with his friends. He enjoys these connections. And it even seems that there were certain people within his following that he was even closer with. We tend to think of, the disciples, the 12. There were other women that he was very close to. It seems very close to Mary Magdalene, for instance. The gospel writers, they didn't really expand too much on that, but they certainly hinted it. But we also get some specific references to, I think if we can put the next text up, about 8 days after Jesus said this, he took Peter, John, and James with him and went up onto a mountain to pray. Peter, James, and John. James and John were brothers, and probably, well, they were related to Peter. But Jesus seems to have three of his followers who he kind of singles out repeatedly. You wonder, did that, was that favoritism? Did that cause some tensions? We don't really know. I mean, there was seems like a lot of competition amongst the disciples about who's the greatest and all that kind of thing. Maybe this was the cause of some of it, who knows? But Jesus had a kind of like an inner circle, if you like, people that were especially close to him. And he treasured those people. There's some indication even in the Gospels that John was who's at one point references the disciple whom Jesus loved. Perhaps John was even closer than Peter and James. And certainly at the end of Jesus' life, he's on the cross there. And he says to John, who's at the cross, and Mary, his mother, John, here is your mother, and Mary, here is your son. There seems a very intimate connection there where he it's almost like John becomes part of his family. And we have treasured relationships, right? All of us, we have treasured friends, people who we're really close to. And people that we need to make time for. That's important. That's an important part of our community because we get nurture and nourishment and well-being from that. And it's reciprocal, right? The other people get that from us. That there's an ease about being together. It's good for us. And we also get challenged by people who are that close to us. People can speak truth into our lives at that level of relationship. That's not possible in relationships that maybe don't feel quite so secure. So we see that very much in Jesus's life. Jesus loves being with his friends. We're going to celebrate communion in a moment where we celebrate the last dinner, the last supper that Jesus had with his closest followers. And he talks about earnestly desiring to eat this dinner together. It's like Jesus is at one of his darkest moments, one of his most vulnerable moments. He just wants to be with his friends. And he goes out to pray, after that, and he just wants his friends to be with him. And when we think about some of our darkest moments, some of our, the hardest times in our lives, we just need those people around us, people who we trust, people who are already close. So let's just, as we approach communion, let's just take stock here. And I want to sort of go back through what we've reflected on and just ask ourselves four different questions. And for each of us, we're going to have a different response to each one. And that's totally cool. There's no specific answer here. But let's look at the first one. Who is my family? So this Jesus redefined family, right? So the challenge here is, am I too closed? Am I too comfortable? Am I not inclusive enough? Are the people that I work with, that people in my neighborhood, acquaintances, people that I'm connected to, that I need to see in a different kind of way. And I need to think of them perhaps more like family, like I have a responsibility to them, and reach out to include them, not in a condescending or patronizing way, but by seeing them differently, by giving them a different name, if you like. Is it possible that that's where, you know, we've perhaps diminished a little bit? We need to do more of that. That's the challenge for us. We need to be good news to other people in that kind of way. Next question would be, where is my center? So this is a reflection on, okay, how much do I recenter, and how often do I recenter on the God who is love, recentering my whole existence, my whole being on the center of love? Has that drifted? And I think with spiritual practice, I think everybody drifts. I drift all the time. I kind of recenter and I get back into the groove, and then stuff happens and I drift. So, you know, where do we need to recenter? Just want to invite everybody. We have a prayer practice evening this coming Tuesday. We'll be outdoors, weather permitting, 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock. We'll just do a couple of prayer practices together that help us recenter. Just welcome everybody to come along for that. Thirdly, am I kind to myself? Okay, do I see myself as a friend? Do I actually need to look after myself a little bit more? Do I need to consciously love myself and accept myself instead of looking for validation from everybody else or from what I do? Am I comfortable, or do I need to grow in comfort in being alone and doing things that I enjoy doing and not feeling guilty about it? Fourthly, who are my friends? Who are the people that we treasure most? And can we treasure them without feeling guilty and just enjoy that and be there for them? And this is one area, I think, where, you know, I said at the beginning, this pandemic has messed with all of our minds, right? So I know for me personally, and I know this is not just true for me because I get to talk to a lot of people about their lives, that some close friendships have been disrupted as a result of this weird life that we're living right now. And it's because of perhaps differences of opinion. It's because people have started behaving weirdly or just slightly differently because of what's going on circumstantially. And it's sort of thrown things out. And perhaps some of the most treasured relationships we've had have just been jarred or strained. And perhaps this is one area where we need to reconnect. And it might not be in person, it might be, you know, virtually, or it could be in person, whatever it is. Where do we need to restore something that's been lost? Because that's a healthy part of community. So with these four questions, we're asking ourselves, where do we need to make time for community? And as we come to communion now, we're going to sing a song. It's an opportunity for us to reflect. We have a station at the back of the room where you can light a candle and sort of just pray and perhaps meditate on that flame. There's a stations here where you can make a financial offering. We have a prayer station on either side towards the back where you can write out a prayer that could just be a heart cry, or it could be a specific prayer request, and people will pray for you during the week. You can just stay in your seat and spend that time quietly in reflection. And of course, we have communion at the back of the room, which has been prepped in a very sanitary way. And you can take it there, or just take the crackers and the cup of wine and fruit juice and bring it back to your chair. Let's do how we feel prompted, how we feel moved at the moment. I'm going to pray and then we'll take communion. Lord, thank you for your friendship with us and the reality that, like Matthew, no matter who we are, there is absolutely nothing at all that stops you loving us and seeing us in actually all our beauty, all our potential, all our goodness, ways that we find so hard to see about ourselves. So I just pray now that you'd come to us in that atmosphere of love and acceptance, that you would come to us and help us honestly look at our lives, not judgmentally, not out of guilt, but out of hope and your calling to us to make time for community. Come, we pray. Amen.